Hi everybody, and welcome to episode number 13 of the ASP.NET Monsters. Ooh, spooky 13.
Number 13. I'm glad that this isn't like Halloween or Friday.
Yeah, that would be
Although if you're watching this on a Friday, we apologize in advance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not recording it on a 13th or on a Friday.
No.
So normally we end our broadcast by asking if anybody has won our contest and then congratulating ourselves for being so sneaky at coming up with a contest that nobody can win. But we can't do that this week. No, why can't we do that this week?
Well, I'll tell you, Simon, we actually had planned on this contest for running 26 episodes. We had this planned out, but we made it to 10. And we have a winner. So on episode 10, loading settings from a database in ASP.NET Core, you can see here in the comments, if you scroll down into the comments, we have an entry coming in from Peter Puglisi from Brisbane, Australia. And he said, here's my contest entry. And he said, as of episode 10, you get to hear, and then if you base64 decode this to ASCII, then you can then start coming up with the ASCII characters, and then of course you can translate that to text. And he's really close here, and I'll just show what we've got. He actually just a minor detail, missed the JZ here, which would have been where he needed to be. But the final code was, the monsters have all your ASP.NET fun. That would have been the final thing. But I guess there's not really much point. Like, he's on to us.
So, yeah, I don't think that there's any point in continuing because it just becomes a race then.
Exactly. Whoever submits it first, whatever. So, no. Yeah, we're going to award this to Peter. So, Peter is the winner here. And we have these Groovy Monsters t-shirts on order. So, Peter and I have connected offline. We are going to get this set up, and we've got a t-shirt on the way for Peter right away. So, we're going to take a week or so and figure out a new contest to get started. But for now, this is our this is our first winner, Peter Puglisi from Brisbane, Australia. Congratulations.
Yeah, so I think that like 90% of the reason that he won is because he's a day ahead of everybody else. He's living in the future.
I know, it's not fair, right? He's like in that time zone. And then, I mean, unfair to our American viewers, he also knows what the letter Z is.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably a real point of confusion
for them. Bit of a disadvantage, especially from the future. So.
Okay, great. Well, let's move on to our actual episode here.
Okay.
Just get rid of your screen here, and okay. So I wanted to talk today a little bit about what the .NET Core is. So
before you get into that, would you like to share your screen?
Oh, am I not sharing my screen?
Yes,
not yet. I would love to share my screen.
Sharing your screen makes it a little bit easier on this end for me to see what's going on.
Okay, I'm going to show the right screen.
Failing that, I will just do my best to try and sound intelligent and ask you questions at appropriate time.
Okay, sounds good. Here we go. So hopefully you can see my screen now. Shared and recorded. This might be something that people have heard about. The name .NET Core is kind of embedded in the name of the new ASP.NET platform. But I want to talk a little bit about what it is and why we're moving to it and all of that sort of stuff here. So for those people who weren't lucky enough to be around in the early 2000s when Microsoft was doing lots of talks about what .NET was and how it worked and all of that stuff, when you compile a .NET application, it actually compiles it into like this intermediate language. And so what gets shipped out is this sort of half-compiled sort of thing. So this was the same sort of idea that Java had, that you would compile to an intermediate language that would then run on top of a virtual machine. But the way that .NET works is a little bit different from that, in that when you start running that application on whatever machine you're running it on, then there's a just-in-time compiler that will transform that intermediate language into actual native bytecode. So that's how you get a really fast experience, but at the same time you end up with something that's mostly portable. So the first time that you run a .NET application, you'll sometimes take a performance hit as a just-in-time compiler just-in-time compiles it. But the output of that stuff is saved off and cached, so in future everything is a lot faster. So that idea hasn't really changed in the new version of .NET, but what has changed is pretty much everything else. So one of the new things that has come out in the last little while is there's a new compiler. So this compiler for C Sharp and for VB is actually written in C Sharp. I know, crazy. Always blows my mind writing compilers in the language that it's targeting.
That's the
So this is,
self-hosted compiler idea, right?
yeah. So this is a fully managed compiler pipeline in Rosalind. That means that we can hook into the pipeline using C Sharp. We can write all sorts of cool extensions. There's great extensibility points all throughout the compiler that allow us to hook into it and do different things. It also is a lot faster than the old compiler, and of course, it's a lot more fun because it has a cool code name. So the output from this compiler is the same intermediate language that came out of the old compiler. And this intermediate language runs on top of this just-in-time compiler, which is now also new. So there is a new 64-bit compiler that came out in the last little while, which is called RyuJit. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that properly.
Right, 64-bit jitter.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
So this is the thing that compiles an intermediate bytecode into actual instructions that your computer can process and understand. Then on top of this is the .NET framework. So these are things like the base class libraries. So all of the things in like system dot anything you can think of, those are all the base class libraries. And that stuff is still written in some sort of .NET language. I believe most of it's written in C Sharp. And that's all the stuff that you can access from your application. So the .NET Core, or .NET Core 5 here, is mostly the same libraries, but instead of them all being shipped at once in one giant package, they're being cut up and sliced into little bits that are being shipped individually as NuGet packages. So this means that when you build your application, instead of being built on top of like one giant set of libraries that only gets versioned every 18 months or something like that, you end up with a lot of smaller libraries that might be versioned much more quickly, which is super nice for components like system.web that the web is moving at a breakneck pace. If you wait 18 months to make a change to that, then that's a significant penalty to have to pay.
I guess a really good point on that would be if you look at something like regex, or maybe the security component, that just it's a small piece of the library in the old world. But if there was a security patch that was required in order to fix something, or an execution improvement on regex, on a regex library or something, you'd actually have to wait for the full .NET framework to ship again before you're able to release that patch. Whereas in the new world, because you know, it's just contained to that one package, it'll actually just be a lot faster to be able to, you know, the cadence on it can be much quicker than the broader package. As an example, those aren't necessarily packages that are identified. I was just giving those as kind of ideas, but you get the idea there.
Yeah, absolutely. So it allows us to be a lot faster in shipping bits and pieces. The other really interesting thing about .NET Core is that it is cross-platform. So this means it'll run on Linux, it'll run on OS X, and it'll run on Windows. So the penalty that we pay for this is that some of the Windows-specific stuff doesn't work inside of .NET Core, which is totally understandable if you want it to be portable. So it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to have like Active Directory integration working as part of that because there is not necessarily any Active Directory to integrate with in these other platforms. So it ends up being like lighter weight, more modular, cross-platform, and in theory faster. And that's pretty much what this .NET Core is. On top of this is where you run your actual applications. So you can see up here in this slide that I have hopefully stolen from somebody else's presentation. On top of this .NET Core 5, you might run your ASP.NET 5 application, but you could also run your ASP.NET 5 application on top of .NET Framework 4.6. So you can make this decision as you progress through building your application and as you look at the environment that you're targeting, whether you want to target the full 4.6 framework or if you want to do something a little bit lighter weight and target just .NET Core 5, which would allow you to be portable across platforms. Anyway, that's I think the division that I wanted to lay out in people's minds here.
Excellent. So, did we want to? We've looked at a couple of things in the past. So, maybe did you want to pull up a sample project and just have a look at some of those components sliced up? I know we've had a, you know.
Yeah, let me see if I happen to have a project conveniently open here. Don't look at it too deeply, because this will give you an idea of what my next talk is going to be about.
But if we look at
So,
that project.json, we can kind of see how those things are broken down now, right?
so we can see a little bit of a division here that we've got these dependencies in here. So this is a little bit of an idea of how this stuff is split out, but you'll actually get a little better idea if you take a look at references here. So you can see that we have this .NET 4.5.1 here, and I have .NET Core 5.0 here. So these would be the different dependencies for each one of those. So if we take a look at this like .NET Core 5 stuff, we can see drilling into say something like MVC that it itself has a bunch of dependencies on other libraries. And drilling down even further here, I can see that this actually has a dependency on this package called system.collections. So system.collections you're almost certainly familiar with from the full framework, but this is actually split out as a separate package now in here. So it means that if something changes in system.collections, if somebody comes up with a brilliant new way of building binary trees, let's say, and they want to put that in system.collections, then this could be released and versioned, and I wouldn't have to wait for .NET, whatever next is, 4.7, the full framework to roll out. I could just update this one individual package.
Okay, and so one of the cool things about this then from a dependency perspective is if I'm working on a project that I am targeting 4.6, for example, but I am targeting core as well, and one of the providers maybe for dependency injection doesn't run on core, I could actually target these separately, and because they're split out and because the dependencies are actually resolved separately down different chains, I could actually hop in here, and if you scroll down a little bit further there, we have the opportunity to in the code in project.json, right under frameworks, we could actually say, okay, for 4.5.1 I'm going to use AutoFac, but for DNX Core I'm going to use Ninject, for example, if one supported core and the other one didn't. So I've got the opportunity on a per framework basis to actually break these out. So yeah, that's a perfect example. So we could probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I've done with this is sending email. So on .NET full framework, you can send email just through like system.net mail or wherever that happens to live, but that doesn't exist in the Lite framework, in the core framework. So I ended up pulling in like, I don't know, some SendGrid or Postmark or something like that instead.
Right, exactly. So that's one of the nice things about having these little pieces broken down. If one of those far out pieces depends on something that exists on Windows but doesn't exist on the others, it's easy enough to swap out, and we don't have to be bound to that library.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it.
Excellent.
I'm so used to asking about who's won the contest to end our broadcast, but we don't have that anymore.
We
So
don't have that anymore. So yes,
we'll just have to taper off awkwardly and
the
thank
answer
everybody for
is
listening.
yes, somebody has won the contest. Congratulations again, Peter. And for everybody else who is hoping to win, we're just going to roll with it and give us a week here. We'll reset and we'll get another contest on the go. Thanks for walking us through this, Simon.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.